ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Canto 5, Chapter 14, Text Number 45. Yakyaya dharma patye vidhine punaya.
Yakyaya dharma patye vidhine punaya.
Yakyaya dharma patye vidhine punaya. Yogaya Sankhya Shirase Prithvishvaraya
Yogaya Sankhya Shirase Prithvishvaraya
Yogaya Sankhya Shirase Prakritishvaraya
Yogaya Sankhya Shirase Prakritishvaraya
Narayanaya Haraye Nama Ityudara Word for word. Yajnaya.
Yajnaya.
Unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Who enjoys the results.
Who enjoys the results.
Of all great sacrifices.
Of all great sacrifices.
Dharmapatiye.
Dharmapatiye.
Unto the Master.
Unto the Master.
Or Propounder.
Or Propounder.
Of religious principles.
Of religious principles.
Vidhine punaya.
Vidhine punaya.
Who gave the devotee.
Who gave the devotee.
The intelligence.
The intelligence.
To follow the regulative principles properly.
To follow the regulative principles properly.
Yogaya.
Yogaya.
The personification of mystic yoga.
The personification of mystic yoga.
Sankhya Shirase.
Sankhya Shirase.
Who taught the Sankhya philosophy.
Who taught the Sankhya philosophy.
Or who actually gave knowledge of Sankhya.
Or who actually gave knowledge of Sankhya.
To the people of the world.
To the people of the world.
Prakriti Ishwaraya.
Prakriti Ishwaraya.
The Supreme Controller.
The Supreme Controller.
Of this cosmic manifestation.
Of this cosmic manifestation.
Narayanaya.
Narayanaya.
The resting place of the innumerable living entities.
The resting place of the innumerable living entities.
Nara means the living entities.
Nara means the living entities.
And Ayana means the shelter.
And Ayana means the shelter.
Haraye. Unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Known as Hari.
Known as Hari.
Namaha.
Namaha.
Respectful obeisances.
Respectful obeisances.
Iti.
Iti.
Thus.
Thus.
Udaran.
Udaran.
Very loudly.
Very loudly.
Hasyan.
Hasyan.
Smiling.
Smiling.
Rigatvam.
Rigatvam.
Api.
Api.
Although in the body of a deer.
Although in the body of a deer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who.
Who.
Samudajahara.
Samudajahara.
Translation by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Even though in the body of a deer, Maharaj Bharat did not forget the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, when he was given up the body of a deer, he loudly uttered the following prayer. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is sacrifice personified. gives the results of ritualistic activity. He is the protector of religious principles, the personification of mystic yoga, the source of all knowledge, the controller of the entire creation, and the supersoul in every living entity. He is beautiful and attractive. I am quitting this body, offering obeisances unto him, and hoping that I may perpetually engage in his transcendental loving service. Uttering this, Maharaj Bharat left his body. Purport by His Divine Nature, Prabhupada. The entire Vedas are meant for the understanding of karma jnana in yoga, fruitive activity, speculative knowledge in mystic yoga. Whatever way of spiritual realization we accept, the ultimate goal is Narayana, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The living entities are eternally connected with Him via devotional service. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, Ante Narayana Smritihi, the perfection of life is to remember Narayana at the time of death. Although Bharat Maharaj had to accept the body of a deer, he could remember Narayana at the time of death. Consequently, he took birth as a perfect devotee in a Brahmana family. This confirms the statement of Bhagavad Gita 6:41. Suchinam Srimatange Yoga Prashto Vijayate. One who falls from the path of self-realization takes birth in a family of Brahmanas or wealthy aristocrats. Although Maharaj Bharat appeared in the royal family, he became neglectful and took birth as a deer. Because he was very cautious within his deer body, he took birth in a Brahmana family as Dhar Bharat. During this lifetime, he remained perfectly Krishna conscious and preached the gospel of Krishna consciousness directly, beginning with his instructions to Maharaj Raghuguna. In this regard, the word Yogaya is very significant. The purpose of Ashtanga Yoga, as stated by Madhvacharya, is to link or connect with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The goal is not to display some material perfections. Om Agyarati Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurum Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadatiya Padantikam Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nitya Ananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shrivasani Gaurav Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. So this verse tells us about the prayer that Maharaj Bharat offered in the body of a deer. Those words, these last words before he left the body. Now this verse, text 45, brings us almost to the end of chapter 14. And not only brings us to the end of this chapter 14, but it also brings us to this beautiful pastime of Maharaj Bharat. The next verse and the last verse after this is the Phalashruti. So this verse is in one sense the last verse of this beautiful pastime of Maharaj Bharat. In the last few chapters, we saw the three lifetimes of Maharaj Bharat unfolding. You know, how he was a royal king and then renounced everything, and then he was in the body of the deer. And then the last one was how he was as a son of Brahma, Jar Bharat. So we saw the beautiful unfolding of the different aspects of his three lifetimes. And then, in the last few chapters, we actually heard his preaching, his realizations to King Raghuguna. So, they are very deep and penetrating instructions, very eye-opening. So, ordinarily, if we see that in a Grihastha family life, when children are raised, and then they grow up, they get busy in their lives, and the couple, the elderly couple is still at home. So, and still the husband is not willing to give up the wife, or the wife is not willing to give up the husband. They are still together. So which means there is attachment. There is attachment to each other. But when Maharaj Bharat was the king, and he wasn't just an ordinary king. He was the king of the entire earth planet. And yet, he could give up that kingdom. He could give up his young, beautiful wife. He could give up his worthy sons and go to the forest to perform devotional service. Of course, he was already a devotee. That is why he could take such a step. Otherwise, who would have the courage to give up all this? Like in a few verses prior, it was mentioned that he gave up all this just like stool. Like for him, they were just as important as stool is to an individual. That's how important all these things were. When time come, yes, you do your duties when needed, but when time come, you just leave and you walk off from them when as if they may mean nothing to you. So in this way, Maharaj Bharat gave up that which is very difficult to give up. So that's why he had jnana, he had knowledge. But it wasn't just jnana, it was realized knowledge. Why realized? Because he could act on it. So we may have the knowledge, but unless and until we can realize it and we can act on it, it just remains knowledge. It just doesn't do us much good. Of course, we will continuous repetition of the knowledge, continuous understanding and hearing of the knowledge will bring us to that stage one day. But as is mentioned here, Maharaj Bharat already had that knowledge. And he was just one step short of being perfect. He was on the Bhava platform. So just one step short of prema, of perfection, that's where he was. But look, such a heavy punishment to be in the body of the deer, right? Spend one lifetime in the body of a deer. And although he was in the body of a deer, his mind and consciousness were not that of a deer. Because it's mentioned that he, when he realized that now he's in the body of the deer, he didn't live with his family, his deer family in the Kalanjara mountains. He moved from there. He went to the ashram of Pulaha. So when he went to the Pulaha ashram, he went there with the intention of hearing Harikatha from the sages there. So then he used to spend his days just hearing Harikatha, listening to them from the sages. And it is mentioned that he, even in that lifetime, he performed austerities as a deer because he didn't eat fresh green grass like the other deers. He would just eat dry leaves that fell off from the trees. And in this way, he would just try to focus his mind always on the Supreme Lord. So that's how he spent his life of a deer. And then how it is mentioned that smiling, hasyan, he was smiling when he left this body of a deer. You know, before when he was in the body of Maharaj Bharat, he was the king and renunciate. There, the time when he left his body, he was thinking of the deer. But now when he is in the body of the deer, he's thinking of the Supreme Lord. So you see how Krishna knows how to put us in a situation where we can actually become more Krishna conscious. So, which means that nothing occurs by accident. Krishna, no, there is no such thing as coincidence. Krishna places things, situations, activities in our lives in such a way that it makes us more and more Krishna conscious. We become more and more eager to take shelter of the lotus feet. This is what happened to Maharaj Bharat in the form of a deer. He just spent a life of repentance, of deep regret. And what did that regret do? It made him think of Krishna all the time, right? So that's why it is, he was at such a great level, at the level of, you can say postgraduate level of devotional service, at a very high level. And from there he fell. And then he was able to control his mind, even in the body of a deer, because he still had the consciousness of a human being, of a devotee, where he left off in his past life. So in this way, he, even in the body, he was praying to the Lord throughout life, and that's why it's important that we always train our mind. So this verse, I was thinking, Prabhupada is actually summed up, because it's one of the last verses of Maharaj Bharat's pastime. He's actually giving us the main points that we need to take home from this, the lesson that we need to learn from Maharaj Bharat's pastime is, somehow or the other, we have to fix our mind on Krishna, right? Smartavya satatam Vishnu vismartavya na jata chit sarve vidhi nisheda shor eva yoreva kinkara. So just like Srila Prabhupada mentions it, Ante Narayana Smriti. How will that happen? How will that happen at the time of death when the body and the mind are so disturbed and the body is in so much pain? If throughout the life we haven't practiced it, how will it happen at the time of death? So that's why during the lifetime, train the mind, follow the rules and regulations. And the biggest rule is always remember Krishna and never forget him. All the other rules and regulations are subservient to this one rule. And then Srila Prabhupada interestingly also quotes here this verse 6:41 from Bhagavad Gita. So this verse from Bhagavad Gita, this is spoken by Lord Krishna to Arjuna. So chapter 6 of Bhagavad Gita talks about Dhyan Yoga. So in this chapter, Lord Krishna is telling Arjuna how a yogi meditates, what he should eat, how he should sleep, how should he meditate, he should, and he talks about the mind most importantly, how he should fix the mind, right? He says, so one has to elevate oneself with the mind and not degrade, right? When Arjuna hears all these rules and regulations for meditation, he becomes very disturbed and he has concerns now. So he says, Chanchalami Mana Krishna, my dear Lord, this mind that you're saying it should be like in a windless place where, there is no wind and then that's how the lamp is lit and it doesn't flicker or waver. That's how the mind has to be focused while meditating. And he says, how is it possible? And he says, it's possible to control the wind, but it is not possible to control the mind. And you are saying just control the mind like this and follow all these regulations. So then Arjuna starts to get this doubt. So then he asks Krishna, he says, you are giving us these rules and regulations, but what happens to a practitioner, a spiritual practitioner, who is trying to become a devotee, who's trying to perfect his sadhana, but he's not able to, he falls down. So this is like Arjuna is trying to confirm this because Krishna has already mentioned in chapter 2. In chapter 2 verse 40, he mentions Miha Vikrama Nashosti. It doesn't become destroyed. What doesn't Swalpam Apiyasya Dharmasya Trayate Mahato Bhayat. He says even a little endeavor on this path saves one from the greatest danger. So Krishna has already informed Arjuna that even if you make a little bit progress, you will be saved. But because when he hears all these rules and regulations of meditation, of Dhyan Yoga, then Arjuna again asks him the same question just to confirm from him, what happens to a yogi who does a little bit of devotion, of practice, and then he falls down, he's not able to continue. And then in the next verse he says, this is verse 37 onwards, the conversation on this topic starts in chapter 6. And he says, look, is he like a riven cloud who loses his identity? So then Srila Prabhupada explains the riven cloud in the purport. He says that, just like a cloud breaks away from a huge big cloud and then it becomes separated from the rest of the clouds. It gets blown by the wind. It becomes dissipated. And then suddenly it loses its identity. So then Prabhupada also explains, he says, this is what, he becomes like a dissipated cloud, this is what it means. And then Arjuna says that this is what happens is that this person neither has anything material nor does he has anything spiritual because he anyway failed. So he loses his material life. See, it's mentioned in the scriptures, Prabhupada explains that we all are supposed to do our prescribed duties. So this yogi has given up his prescribed duties. He is engaged in practices, in spiritual practices, but then he fails because it's too hard. So what happens? Now he's neither here nor there. Where is he? But Krishna says that one who is engaged in pious activities, who engages in spiritual practices, he ensures that will not meet with distress, with destruction, either in this world or in the next. So Krishna assures that neither materially nor spiritually such a person will end up losing anything. So both ways it's beneficial. So in this way, then Krishna answers, he says, then he comes to this verse that Srila Prabhupada has mentioned here. So that was just a bit of a background to understand why Krishna is narrating this verse, because Arjuna had his doubts in chapter 6 when he heard the strict injunctions and those are regulations of the Dhyana Yoga. Then he has his doubts. So that's why this topic is being explained to him by Lord Krishna, that when such a yogi does engage, then even a little bit of progress made on this path, it's not lost. So then in 641, which is this verse, Krishna says, Prapya punya kritam lokam ushitam shashvate sama shuchinam shrimatam gehe yoga prashto vijayate. So suchinam shrimatam gehe means Prapya punya kritam lokam means after having spent. See, you see, because there are two types of yogis, Krishna explains. Two types of spiritual practitioners. One who fall down after short practice, and one who fall down after long practice, after making a lot of advancement. So those who fall down after short practice, he says, what it means is that they still have some material desires. They had some material desires due to which they sort of got distracted and they just left their sadhana there. So then Krishna says, when this happens, then because they had material desires in their heart, now Krishna is so kind, although they are not acting on it, they have the desires in their heart. So Krishna sends them to the heavenly planets. Enjoy to your heart's content. Whatever desires you have in your heart, enjoy them. So much, and it is mentioned that after a long time, Srila Prabhupada explains that after a long time, after enjoying in the heavenly planets, such a devotee comes back and he takes birth in the family of Shuchinam Srimatam. So, in the family of those who are in the Brahmana family, Srimatam in the family of a wealthy business or mercantile families. And why so? Because in such families, you don't have to struggle very hard for existence. Your financial issues or finances are already taken care of, so then you can focus on devotional service. So in this way, Krishna gives us many chances. He gives us many opportunities. But then, yes, I was thinking, what a waste of time. You know, you spend a long, long time in the heavenly planets and then you come back. But Krishna wants us to become completely purified or even any tinge of material desires before we actually, go to the spiritual world. So that's why it is mentioned that, but there is one, solace, because Guruji Prabhu mentions, he quotes Baladev Vidya Bhushan there, and he says that when such a devotee, he is in the heavenly planets and he's enjoying immense opulence there of every kind, whatever you want to eat, whatever you want to enjoy, gardens, parks, good weather, palatial houses, whatever you want, you can get there. But he says then, after enjoying that for a long time, then he develops a distaste, right? So he develops a distaste for this sense gratification, and that's when he comes back to the earth planet, and then he takes birth in the family of a Suchinam or Srimatam, that is, in the family of a Brahmana or in the family of a wealthy mercantile families. So now, you might say, yes, heavens are actually not very easily attained also. Like, you might think that, heaven is just something next door, you can just walk in. No. Those who actually follow Karma Kanda with the intention of performing, or with the intention of achieving the heavenly planets, they have to do it for many, many lifetimes. They have to accumulate immense piety to be able to go to the heavenly planets. They are not very easily achieved. But it is only with the grace of the Lord that He allows a practitioner who falls away after short practice to be able to go there and then enjoy, indulge in sense gratification, fulfill his material desires. And then when he becomes satiated, when he says, okay, enough, I'm fed up, that's when he comes back to do the rest of his spiritual progress. So, and then he goes to, in the heavenly planets, like I said, it's not easy to go there, because it requires a lot of piety. In the scriptures, it is mentioned that Bali Maharaj, he was from a demonic lineage, but Bali Maharaj had conquered all the heavenly planets, all the hellish planets, all the earthly planets, and he had driven out the demigods, Indra and all the other demigods from the heavenly planets. But at that time, the guru of the demons, Shukracharya, advised him. He said, to become the legitimate king of the heavenly planets, you will have to perform 100 Ashwamedh Yagyas. So only when one performs 100 Ashwamedh Yagyas, thus one become eligible to become the king of heavens. You see, that's why whenever somebody is trying to perform 100 Ashwamedh Yagyas, then Indra becomes worried, right? He becomes worried because he sees, oh, here is another competitor for my position. That's why when Prithu Maharaj was trying to do the 100th, he didn't disturb him till he was doing the 99. But when he was trying to do the 100th Ashwamedh Yagya, he stole the horse. You see, this is why, because then after accumulating all this piety, you become eligible to become the king of heavens. Excuse me. And then in the scriptures, we also, in Ramayana, just mentioned how Trishambhu Maharaj, he was the ancestor of King of Lord Ram, right? And he also had developed his desire to go to the heavenly planets, but he didn't have enough piety. So he went to his guru and he said, why don't you send me up there with your piety, with your, you know, tejas? Why don't you send me there? So the guru said, okay. So he sends him there. So it's shown that he's written that he's going up, transcending the material realm, going into the heavenly realm. And then, but when Indra, he comes to know that this person is trying to come into the heavenly planets without having enough piety, so with his mystic potency, he pushes him down. So his guru is pushing him up and Indra is pushing him down, and it is said that even now he's in the middle, he's nowhere, he couldn't get there, but because he didn't have enough piety, enough good karma to reach the heavenly planets. So it's not that easy to even attain heavenly planets. Those karmakarnis who specifically engage in ritualistic activities to engage heavens, they work really hard, really, really hard, do a lot of austerities, charities, penances to be able to achieve heavenly planets. So that was the result of those who fall down after short practice. And then in verse 6:42, Krishna then mentions what happens to those who fall down after long advancement or after long practice, or for some reason they are not able to finish their sadhana. So Maharaj Bharat is mentioned there in those verses that he's one of those examples where he was almost there, like he was at the platform of bhava. So basically 80-90% or maybe even 99% of the job was done. He had almost perfected it, but because he became neglectful, he became distracted, then he fell down. But then at the same time, we've seen how in the past, you know, chapters, how the Lord has shown him special mercy, that even in the body of the deer, he was given the consciousness of his previous life. He had the remembrance of his previous life, and he had the consciousness from where he left off. The Krishna consciousness level at which he left off in the body of Maharaj Bharat, he got it when he in the body of a deer. So, and that's what is explained. And then Krishna goes on to explain in verse 43 and 44 of chapter 6 that these transcendentalists, when they fall down, then they in the next life, then they are able to take up. They take birth in the family of learned transcendentalists, which is even, it means spiritually they're more advanced than the family of the Brahmanas or the business families. They take, and then Srila Prabhupada in that purport, he explains that, he gives the example of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj. Because Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj took a family, birth in the family of such great Vaishnavas, Bhakti Vinod Thakur was his father. So to them, nobody needs to preach to them. Piety and devotion to the Lord comes naturally to them. You know, you don't need to tell them, oh, here is the Bala, please try to chant a few Brahmas. And you know, when they see deity worship, parents doing deity worship, they'll naturally do it. They will enthusiastically do it because it's in them as well. And then Srila Prabhupada also gives his own example. Because when he was a young child, he saw his father do deity worship. He didn't resent it. He wasn't like neutral or he didn't ignore it. He became enthusiastic to do it. So he used to do deity worship with his starlings to come and ring the bell, and then he used to do deity worship at night before going to bed. And then he was also, he wanted to do Rath Yatra. Just imagine a small boy wanting to have a Rath of his own. And at that age, he's preaching because he used to do Rath Yatra in the street. And everybody in the street would cook for Lord Jagannath in his Rath cart. So in this way, someone at his of his level of advancement, that's what Krishna says, that these devotees who have done a lot of, who've already made a lot of progress, and then when they take birth in the family of learned transcendentalists, where their bhakti is just very easy for them to finish off. There are no hindrances in the in terms of finances or in terms of any kind of other restrictions on them doing devotional service. So in this way, but and what are the examples in the scriptures of those who fall down after long time? So Maharaj Bharat is one that we studied here, and then another one Srila Prabhupada mentions even in this chapter and in Bhagavad Gita also is of Ajamila. Ajamila was such a wonderful Brahmin boy. He took birth in the family with a father who's, you know, he was like a priest. He would do austerities, he would do yajnas for the pleasure of the Supreme Lord. And Ajamila as a young boy would assist his father, and in that way he was also getting trained, and he was also enthusiastic in participating in all these sacrifices and austerities for the pleasure of the Lord. And then, so just one optical illusion, just one, you know, moment of what he saw in the forest when he went to collect the paraphernalia like some wood and some flowers to perform a yajna, and that's when he saw the prostitute embracing that man, and he became so enamored by the beauty of that lady that he just couldn't get it out of his mind. He was just thinking, pondering over it so much that he wanted to have her. And eventually, he gave up his beautiful family. He had wife and children. He gave them up. He gave up his parents. He went and lived with this woman. And then to please her, in order to please her, he used to even murder people, rob people to bring wealth to her and to make her happy. So he completely degraded from one end of such divine life to an extremely degraded life. That's how bad it was. But then again he was shown the mercy of the Lord. At the time of death, both Yamadutas and Vishnudutas came. And he was given this consciousness that he could hear their conversation. And when he heard their conversation that, you know, the Vishnudutas are saying he has uttered the name of Narayana, because when he was very old, in his 80s, he had this small boy and he named his little boy Narayana. And he called those names all the time, because he was so affectionate to this little boy. And he would call Narayana, please come and eat with me, come and sit with me, let's go to the market. So he's always chanting the name of Narayana. So then the Vishnudutas and the Yamadutas are arguing in this manner. Like Yamadutas are saying, oh, he has lived a life of a very sinful life. He's stabbing people, killing people, robbing people. And Vishnudutas are saying, but he's chanting the holy names of the Lord. So when he hears this conversation, he realizes, you know, what he has done to his life, how, where he was and what he has come to now. And that acts as a turning point in his life. So you see how merciful the Lord is, because most of us are normally not expected to hear any conversations at that time when the soul is leaving the body. But he is given that opportunity to listen to that conversation between Vishnudutas and Yamadutas, which acts as a turning point in his life, and then he decides to renounce completely, and then he goes, lives in a holy place, and he spends the rest of his life chanting the holy names of the Lord. And it is mentioned in the same way Vishnudutas came in the Vaikuntha plain and then took him back to Vaikuntha Loka. So that is his end. So there is hope. There is hope for those who fall down. Same in the case in the ninth canto, we hear about Sabari Muni. Now Sabari Muni was not an ordinary yogi, he was a mystic yogi. He already had the Ashtasiddhis. And you know, yogi, like Srila Prabhupada says in Bhagavad Gita also and in Bhagavatam in this chapter as well, that the path of bhakti is relatively easy as compared to the path of a yogi. But he was a mystic yogi and he performed so much sadhana, he performed so much meditation underwater, he was doing it under the river Yamuna. And he was doing that, and he had all the mystic siddhis, but when he saw two fish copulating, then he just became completely disturbed. And he wanted to enjoy. And then he immediately came out of the water, he went to King Mandhata, and he said to him, I want to marry your 50 princesses, beautiful princesses, I want to marry and enjoy life. And then, just so that to make sure that he doesn't get rejected, he realizes, oh, I have my body looks old and I have all these matted hair. So he transforms himself into a young man, into a young attractive man. And then obviously all the 50 daughters of King Mandhata fell for him, and then they marry him. And it is mentioned that they were so attracted to him that they forgot that they were sisters, they used to quarrel among themselves. You know, so this is the extent to which, and then because he had all the Ashtasiddhis, Manima, Lagima, Prapti, that he created such opulence, he created a huge palace for all 50 of them to live in, and jeweled beds and bedheads and thrones and gardens and parks and fountains, everything he just created with his mystic potency, and then they were enjoying. But while he was enjoying, then he came to a state where he realized, oh, this is, you know, I fell down from my such great, you know, high spiritual position. And then he became fed up, so he renounced all that and he took Vanaprastha. And then it is mentioned he became a devotee, and his wives, because they were so attached to him, they also became devotees. Eventually, there was happy ending. Yeah, so he didn't. So it was happy ending for him. And also, then there is the passing of Vishwamitra Muni. Now, he was also a great yogi. Because, why did he become? Because actually he was a king. But when he got into competition with the Vasishtha Muni, and he, because of that competition, he also wanted to become a Brahma Rishi like Vasishtha Muni. And then what did he do? He decided to do extreme austerities, which is what he did for many, many thousands of years. But then, again, when someone does a lot of austerities, who gets disturbed? Indra gets disturbed. So he sent the heavenly damsel, Menaka, to disturb him. And he got distracted. He got distracted, he ended up marrying her, and they had a beautiful baby girl called Shakuntala. So, but then that happened, even he realized that, oh, it's such a shame that this is what I've done. I had a goal in life, I had a purpose in life, I had to become better than Vasishtha Muni, and here I am, I'm a mundane living entity, I'm just living my grihastha life, so attached to my wife, and you know, trying to procure the daily needs of my family. Where is that sadhu in me gone? So he also recovered. He corrected himself. He corrected his mistake, and then he again went back to do his tapasya, to engage in his devotional practices and spiritual practices. So in this way, there are so many of them who actually fell, but all these pastimes actually show us that Krishna will take care, that even if a little bit progress is made, Krishna will take care, he's there for us. And this is Srila Prabhupada on the 5th of May 1977, Srila Prabhupada wrote a letter to Jayananda Prabhu. Now we all know Jayananda Prabhu, what a great devotee he was. And Srila Prabhupada was so appreciative and grateful to him, because he used to do so much service and such a symbol of humility and affection, full of affection for everybody. You know, like it is mentioned, just like Sanatana Goswami was favorite of all the ruffians and all the saints, and even Jayananda Prabhu used to be loved by all, even the drunkards of that time, and you know, hippies who used to come, and also the devotees. Everybody used to like him. And so, but he had, just then he had left his body. So, Srila Prabhupada had then written a letter to him sending his blessings. And he says, my dear Jayananda, please accept my blessings. I am feeling very intensely your separation. In 1967, you joined me in San Francisco. You were driving my car and chanting Hare Krishna. You were the first man to give me some contribution, $5,000, for printing my Bhagavad Gita. After that, you have rendered very favorable service to Krishna in different ways. I so hope at the time of your death, you were remembering Krishna, and as such, you have been promoted to the eternal association of Krishna. If not, if you had any tinge of material desire, you have gone to the celestial kingdom to live with the demigods for many thousands of years and enjoy the most opulent life of material existence. From there, you can promote yourself to the spiritual world. But even if one fails to promote himself to the spiritual world, at that time, he comes down again on the surface of the globe and takes birth in a big family like our yogis or brahmanas, or an aristocrat family, where there is again chance of reviving Krishna consciousness. But as you were hearing Krishna Kirtan, I am sure that you were directly promoted to Krishna Loka. Janma karma cha metevyam evam yo veti tattvata tyaktva deham punarjanma naiti mameti suvarjuna. Krishna has done a great favor to you not to continue your deceased body. You see, because Jayananda Prabhu had cancer, so it was a very painful condition that he was in, but yet he was in a very good consciousness. So Krishna has done a great favor to you not to continue your diseased body and has given you a suitable place for your service. Thank you very much. Your ever well wisher, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So you see, even here Srila Prabhupada mentions that if you have some things, then you will go back. But then also he gives assurance then that Krishna will protect you. No matter where you are, Krishna will protect you. But yes, as devotees, we have to be careful. That is the lesson that we learned that from the past of Maharaj Bharat, that we got to be very careful to not be neglectful of our sadhana, to follow all the rules and regulations in detail, and to not commit offenses. Because these things will, we don't even realize, like I said, Maya just gets in from a small pinhole, a hole equivalent to the size of a tiny pin, just that much space she needs to just get in, and then before we know, some issue or some idea has become so big that it actually, you know, engulfs our entire life, our entire consciousness, and devotional service goes into the background. So that's why as devotees, as practicing devotees, we have to be very careful, and there's a big lesson to learn from the pastime of Maharaj Bharat. And yet at the same time, there is assurance from the Lord that He will protect us. Once we have sincerely decided to dedicate our life to serve Him, then He will protect us. We have to have faith. That's what, you know, is mentioned, that one should have faith and one should engage in devotional service. If that's the case, then we are in the hands of the Lord. He will protect us. You know, King Kulshekhar, he says very nice prayers to the Lord. He says, "My dear Lord, elect the swan of my mind, always want to be at the stem of your lotus feet." You see why this metaphor of a swan? Because a swan is it's his sporting activity to actually go inside the stem of the lotus. He likes doing that. So he likes to be there. So then King Kulshekhar saying is, "Let my mind also always just be attracted to that naturally, just like the swan is naturally attracted to doing that. Let me also just do it as my sporting activity. Let me also just engage in that." And then he further says, "Right now I'm healthy and my consciousness is good and I can think about you. So please let me leave my body now so I can think about you. Because at the time of death, the body becomes plagued with so many problems and the throat becomes choked with phlegm and mucus and bile, and all these things are totally, body is totally disordered. So how am I supposed to think about you? How am I supposed to chant your names?" So in this way he makes his beautiful prayers that, "Please, my dear Lord, you help me remember you and you help me leave my body now." So this is a beautiful prayer for us to also always pray that we, please, whatever the situation is, we should be able to remember the Lord. Because it's, you see, in this verse, Maharaj Bharat in the body of the deer, he's saying such beautiful prayers to the Lord, you know. He's calling him Yagnaya, and he's calling him Hariye, right? He's calling him Dharma Hariye, the one, you know, protector of Dharma. So like this, he's giving him such beautiful, it's so good, such beautiful consciousness at the time of death. He's able to glorify the Lord, and he's explaining the nature of the Lord, and then glorifying the Lord at the time of death. This is how he leaves his body. So I'll stop here. Any questions? Corrections? Granthachimipadutan ki.
Jai.
Sri Nagrobaan ki.
Jai.
Chaitanya Prabhu Premanandi.